Welcome to No Substitutions, Please, a show about food and the things people do to it. I'm Noah, Bowties, Elbows, and Shells McKinnon.
And I'm Louisa, Bechamel Mucho Heron.
Very good. Thank you.
I might have had a little help with that one.
From Luis Miguel, obviously.
Sure, yes, that's right.
Before we go ahead and officially tell you what food this is, in case you weren't able to figure that out, we'd like to first say this is our 10th episode.
Hooray! We did it!
Yeah, we made it to double digits. How's that?
It's time to rest on our laurels and collect money from, I don't know, Blue Apron, Stamps.com. Who else is in the game?
Casper, if they're still around. Bombas Socks. LegalZoom.
Yes.
Wondrium is a big one.
Know that one? Sure.
It's basically the new Great Courses Plus, which had its own run.
Oh, yeah. Like, learn a bunch of stuff. Yeah.
I would do away luggage, but we don't want to get into that right now. That's a pretty ugly story. Anyway, what food are we talking about this time, Louisa?
Today we're talking about the classic side dish, usually. It can be a main, though, of course. This is macaroni and cheese.
Heck yeah.
Oh, delicious.
So let's define it. And by the way, just a little bit peek behind the scenes for anybody. This is our second shot at this episode. The first one had some technical difficulties.
Oh no! Everyone's going to know our sordid details of losing audio recordings, which is completely my fault for this one, unfortunately. It's
fine. What is mac and cheese to you? Like, what are the definitional elements of a mac and cheese?
It needs to have a cheese sauce. There are a few ways to achieve that, but it needs to be some cheeses. Exactly, thank you. It needs to be cheeses emulsified in such a way that they can be a sauce over a, I think it needs to be a small size of pasta. But it could be any shape, in my opinion.
Not a short pasta, as you, I think you've
yes.
also
what did I
it?
Say last time? Oh, I've said different cuts of pasta, which you took issue with.
Yes, but you also said short pasta, and I was saying, is that like a short crust, is what we talked about.
Oh, right, that it would just dissolve in the cheese sauce. That's the ultimate. Yeah. It hits your tongue and turns into crumbs.
That's right. Mac and chew, more like.
Oh, I've had some mac and chews in my time. Not pleasant.
Oof. And we'll be talking more about that in the near future. So, for example, okay, so there are three major things. You mentioned emulsified cheese sauce and liquid, small size pasta. So we're talking, I mentioned elbows, bow tie, shells. There's also the cavatappi, the like longer or more drawn out spring spiral type of thing.
Yes. I always think of those as little tongues. I know linguine means tongue, but I think of cavatappi as like little monster tongues.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can't say that I do, but fair enough. I think if you wanted to go unorthodox, maybe a rotini or a penne might work, but as long as it's small, discrete shapes, right? That's
yes.
the requirement.
In my mind, good old-fashioned home-style macaroni and cheese is macaroni, but if you get it in a restaurant and it's going to be fancy, it's going to be shells.
That's right, yeah. And then it will probably have lobster in it.
Yes, exactly.
There actually used to be a place around here, come to think of it, that had, I don't know what that cut of pasta is called, but it was a thicker noodle. It was almost like, it was almost like if you cut an uncooked manicotti, I guess, or manicotto into rounds, but it had ridges. So cylindrical, right? Like it had a whole shape, and the sauce went inside of it, and it had the ridges on the outside, but it wasn't penne, it was far flatter.
Was it big pieces of pasta? That seems strange to me.
Not huge, but definitely bigger than what you're used to for a mac and cheese.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, it was good, it tasted good, but it was kind of odd. I will agree with that. So, big things for me. Number one. So, some of these are going to have roux, all roux, pardon me,
yes.
to start with. Usually a blonde roux. I can't imagine that you would let it darken too much, because then it's not going to be able to.
Although, it's making me wonder now. I wonder if that would be any good. Although, a toasted flavor to the flour and the butter would really interfere with the cheese, I would think.
Number one, depending on the cheese, for sure. And then number two, if I remember correctly, the browner a roux gets, I think it's slightly less able to bind everything together.
That makes sense. I haven't heard that.
So,
yeah.
So that would be an issue. I could be wrong about that. The only times I've made a brown roux have been by accident. So,
yeah. Then you just say, I meant to do this. We were always going to be having gumbo. I don't know what you're talking about when you said stew.
That's right. And then we've also got baked versus... we've got a baked mac and cheese versus stovetop, which is a bit of a misnomer because usually if you're baking the mac and cheese, there's still a stovetop element to it.
Yes. You're getting one more dish dirty and probably doing more work to make like a crumb topping.
Yeah, but that crumb topping though.
Yes, I was going to say, I grew up with only stovetop mac and cheese ever. But as an adult, I've come to really appreciate the... delicious buttered and usually garlic flavored breadcrumbs that you get on a nice baked mac and cheese.
That's right. Yeah, when I started with a baked mac and cheese, but the recipe that I had, the sauce had a warring tendency to separate. So we've gone to stovetop for the most part since, and I'll talk later when we get into kind of our personal touches on the dish. Mm-hmm. I'll talk a little bit about what I've done. I hope that this is the kind of episode that makes you hungry at the end of it. Let me put it that way.
Yes, it certainly made me hungry researching the comments that we're going to use.
And then, of course, by the way, one last thing. You already kind of answered this question, but you prefer a baked mac and cheese with a topping, not just browned. Because there are some kinds of mac and cheese where the idea is that the cheese sauce itself would just toast and form kind of a...
I do like that, but I find that's a little unreliable because it can get kind of leathery. Mm-hmm. So I think I overall prefer a crumb topping, yes.
Yes. And, I mean, a crumb topping is so good. but enough about that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, Am I doing this?
I wrote down that I was going to do it, so here I go. Okay,
then we got to follow that.
We've combed the internet's recipe comment sections, and here's what we found. Dun, 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 dun. Of course, I don't have my first one lined up. Oh, here we go!
Well done.
Totally delicious. I cooked my pasta in a Dutch oven, then drained and wiped it out. Then, when the time came to make the bechamel, I used the Dutch oven again and poured my nudes straight in. Pause. This person did say nudes, and I know they're being very cute, but yeah, you're right. That is a little bit strange.
Continue.
I do think it's cute, though. I poured my nudes straight in and mixed and put directly in the oven. This way saved me some serious dishes, little smiley cat face. Just thought I'd share. This was a lot of work, but super fun and delicious. I really like this because this person's doing the kind of life hack that I like to see in a comment section because recipe blog or, website writers tend to have other people to wash their dishes, and so they don't really consider it a big deal to be like, use this pan and a skillet and a baking sheet. But those of us doing the cooking who don't want to wash all those things can really appreciate a tip like just use the same Dutch oven several times, and I would totally do this.
Yeah, I think when we talked about this, what's particularly interesting here, and you mentioned this, is that you can even do this if you are going to put a crumb topping. Now, I don't know if that's a great idea if you're making it in a Dutch oven because a Dutch oven is deep. So you're not going to get – one of the things I like about a baking sheet or a skillet mac and cheese is that you have plenty of coverage for those crumbs to go everywhere. With a Dutch oven, there's a little less of that, but that depends on your judgment. If that's not a – if you're not a big fan of it, it depends on what your preferred ratio is, let's put it that way.
That's true. Although I'm almost always cooking just for myself, so I find, a portion for one or two is very easy to do, even in a Dutch oven.
And then the other thing I really love about this is that I'm getting the visual now of like you take the Dutch oven out of the non-Dutch oven and you put it on the stovetop and you're gonna serve, and the way you serve it is by slicing into it like a cake.
Yeah, you just get a wedge of mac and cheese.
Yeah, yeah. A whole new meaning to the term wedge salad.
I like the idea of then going back in a panic to this very comment section and saying, oh no, I ruined my Dutch oven with a pie slice. What do I do now?
Okay, I was going to use a spatula is what I was thinking. That's on you for trying to put in like a freaking pizza wheel into the equation. Yeah,
you're right. mac and cheese pizza. No, that's too much carbs. I just thought of it.
Too many. There are places around here that sell one.
I'm sure there are.
I have never once been enticed to try any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I typically use a baking sheet, and now that I'm sitting here thinking about it,
Baking sheet for your
mac and cheese. Yeah.
You get a lot of good brown surface on that.
Uh huh. Well, normally I do everything in the same pot. Mm-hmm. I do use a separate skillet to toast the breadcrumbs, and then everything goes into the mac and cheese, and that goes in the oven. So, I mean, that's three cooking surfaces.
Yeah.
If you could do that all in the Dutch oven, you can bake your crumbs, you can toast your crumbs first, wipe that out, put in the pasta, and make the pasta, wipe that out, make the cheese sauce, then, yeah, I mean, that's a pretty great idea.
Yeah, I would definitely do that.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned on a previous episode, I do have something in my Dutch oven's instructions that say, like, it's not great to have it at super high temperatures on the stovetop, but it can definitely take those in the oven. So, you know, you know that you're going to get a nice, evenly cooked mac and cheese that you can then slice into cake wedges and serve at your birthday party.
Exactly. You don't even need a cake when you've got macaroni and cheese.
I mean, yeah, that's very true.
I already know Noah's not a fan of cake, so he's kind of an easy sell on that idea.
That's right. The band or the food, actually. Really going the distance on this episode.
If only I knew a single other cake song to reference, but I don't.
Same. So here we go. I've got another comment, and it's actually from only a few days. It's a different recipe, but it's from only a few days after the one that you read. And I forgive me in advance if the accent starts to come in. You'll understand why once I get into it. Wow, made this yesterday, and it is so very good. I have to admit, when it came out of the oven in a 12-inch iron skillet, it looked enormous. I told my wife to invite 10 cowboys to dinner because we had plenty. It didn't take long to make a serious dent in the mac and cheese, as we both had monstrous helpings. The flavors were great. Can't recommend this dish enough. 10 cowboys.
Yes, that's so many cowboys.
Yeah, that's like, what is that, a passel of cowboys?
Oh, do they have a name? A gaggle of cowboys?
A posse, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Regulators, mount up.
Oh, yeah, Lord. Emilio Estevez is eating your mac and cheese in there.
A mac and cheese fit for the young guns. Four
that's
stars.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Usher is in there as well. Was he in that movie? Wasn't he one of those?
Ooh, I don't know. He wasn't in the original. He was like 5 years old at the time, I'm pretty sure. But
oh, yeah. But
wait,
really?
How old is Usher?
I think he's older than you think he is, but you might be right that he was not in the original one.
But I think he played a teen, like She's All That. Wasn't he in that movie? Or
oh, I
in
have
the
no
music
idea.
Video? Okay. This is getting too far through the weeds, I think.
Somebody tell us what age Usher is when you listen to this episode. Can't wait to
yes,
hear about this.
Thank you. Please write
at
in.
Any
thank
rate. You. So, two things that I love about this. Number one, I do completely understand when you make food, especially if you're putting it in the oven and you're taking it out and it's in a 12-inch skillet.
Yes.
I've made, like, cornbread and stuff like that in the big skillet. It does always look enormous. Love that.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Second of all, what these people need to do is they need to link up with the people that we've had in other episodes whose large adult sons-in-law do physical labor outside in the cold.
Exactly.
Because clearly those are the people that need to be eating this enormous 12-inch iron skillet mac and cheese.
Please help me. My family needs to carbo load so they can do work outside.
I feel like this is a pretty good symbiotic relationship we're encouraging here. I'm just saying, I think it's the cycle of life.
Mm-hmm. You just ring the dinner bell, all the large adult sons from miles around come and get your delicious mac and
bleeding.
Cheese. Well, that got dark.
It would be very funny if you ring the dinner bell and you hear a bunch of barks and whatnot, but it's actually just your large adult sons-in-law.
The thundering sound of large adult son feet on the ground as they run over.
I'm imagining kind of like an avalanche down the mountain.
Yes.
Presumably, because they're bringing the cattle with them too, because they're cowboys.
Mm-hmm. They got to keep an eye on them.
And then the last thing I love is, I can't say with any certainty that I've never said this before, but monstrous helpings is very good.
That's what recipes should measure in, right? Like, they should say, you know, reasonable serving or monstrous serving. How many monstrous servings does this dozen cookies make? Well, just one, obviously.
That's what I would name my backup band. Noah McKinnon and the Monstrous Helpings.
It's very good.
Yeah. They can all be like real fucked up, like mummies and vampires and other universal monsters that I don't remember. All right.
So what kind of music is this? Is it going to be surf rock? Because obviously that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, okay. It has to be.
All right. Okay.
Should we get macaroni and cheese?
Oh, yeah. Food. That's right.
Yeah, food.
Here's another comment.
I was going to say, let's put feathers in our caps and call it macaroni.
Yay. You did it. Here we go. A sad tale. A little bit sad. Ours is a family with food allergies. I wanted to let you know that the gluten-free version of this dish is completely wonderful. I use brown rice pasta, rice flour for the bechamel, and Ian's gluten-free panko breadcrumbs, half a cup blitzed in the blender and mixed with 2 tablespoons of melted butter, for the topping. For those of you with lactose issues, I also use A2 milk for the bechamel, and half a pound each of grated Parmigiano Reggiano and Cypress Grove Goat Gouda. It's a very expensive mac and cheese, but this recipe is worth it. Flawless every time. This I love. This is the quintessential, actually helpful recipe comment. They had to make substitutions. They explain. They don't really need to explain, but they clearly do explain. Food allergies is why. They tell you exactly what they used instead, so you can make these substitutions yourself. And yeah, they tell you everything about the results. And yes, it's a more expensive mac and cheese, but if you really needed a mac and cheese that was low on lactose, here you go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple of these things that I was kind of like, for example, I forgot what A2 milk is. I have since seen it at the grocery store.
Is that the lower lactose? What is
it? I think that's what it is. I don't know if it's lactose free or what, but yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
And I guess I had heard, it's interesting, I heard for some people, Parmigiano, for some people with lactose intolerance, I should say, Parmigiano Reggiano is very good at not causing those issues. There are other people who say that it's actually worse than other cheeses.
It's made with sheep's milk, isn't that correct? Is that true? Am I thinking of a different cheese?
I don't know. See, this is what I love about No Substitutions, Please. We also learn what we entertain.
Exactly.
Anyway, but I mean, I think you're absolutely right. According to this, Parmigiano is cow's milk cheese.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of something else then. Never mind.
Yeah, I wonder what that... Pecorino, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
Because Pecorino, I know, comes from the Latin for herd. Yep, sheep's milk.
Oh, there we go. Maybe Pecorino would be a good substitute. I don't actually know.
No, I don't think you could. Like. I don't think you could throw. Well, to be fair, okay, yes. For lactose intolerance issues, it might be. I don't think you would get a very good flavor with it. Pecorino is mostly good for kind of controlling excessive sweetness in a tomato sauce or something like that.
Yes, I totally agree with you, but I think people put any type of cheese in mac and cheese, so I could definitely see people trying it.
Yeah, and a goat gouda has got to be. Yeah, I've had a goat cheddar that's very good. I've had some of the fancier goudas. If you take a gouda seriously, I mean,
you make sure it's a very gouda.
Yeah, thank you, E40.
Hooray!
Alrighty, anything else you want to say about this wonderful comment? Like, really, this is
yeah, great. This is like doing your journalistic duty as a commenter, to be like, I want to tell people that I made substitutions, but I'm going to be very specific about the information that they will need for this to resonate. And they do it.
Citizen journalism in the recipe comment section.
Exactly.
All right. Here's another person, and this person is not very nice, and this is not a wonderful comment. What is it with this part of the opening sentence? And the next part is a quote from the recipe. Open parentheses, the grocery store, alas, not like the shore, close parentheses, end quote. Get an editor. The recipe, though, I will probably try, but we'll add some cheddar. It's not mac and cheese if it's not a little orange.
Ugh, this drives me crazy! The people who think they are there to... They think they have a parasocial relationship with the food blogger. And they think they are gently correcting the food blogger by just saying rude complaints, basically.
It, you know, the way that you would do to a person that you respected in real life, you would nag them constantly. Yeah,
exactly.
And the only thing missing from that one is, as we've seen with several other comments, just in the middle of it saying, joke!
Yeah, exactly. You can't take this seriously. You can't be mad. I said joke.
Don't be mad. I'm just a little guy. I'm just joking around. It's my birthday too.
Exactly.
No, I hate people like this. Number one, it's a recipe blog. It's not the strunk mantle of style. You're going to be fine. Mm-hmm.
And it is the way people speak. Like, this is a conversational tone. The sentence which says, in which the food blogger says, their second home, the grocery store, haha, not a nice house at the shore. Relatable, and the way they word it, like, I could see someone saying that to me in conversation. Totally.
There's that. And then also, has this person figured out that cheddar is not naturally orange?
I seriously doubt that they figured that out.
Like, they put stuff in there to make sure that it is that color. I know that because when I found out that it was annatto powder very often, which for me, growing up Puerto Rican, is just like part of the food coloring, right? Like, it's in adobo sauces and so on because it just adds that yellow shade.
Does it have a flavor at all?
It must, because I know in some Mexican cooking, it is straight up used as a major spice.
Oh, but
and I feel like it must add something that I don't really there must be a certain X factor to it.
Yeah,
that
you I'm wouldn't not notice unless it's missing. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
But when I found out that it was annatto powder, I was like, oh, look at that. How amazing this.
I ask because saffron is, of course, a well-known something that will turn your food yellow, but it also has a flavor, which to me is very medicinal, and I do not care for it. But I have not noticed annatto having a specific flavor.
No. I do know that it's very often used. There's a pretty decent, or at least it used to be, Arizona Mexican place around here that had a burrito where the shrimp were achiote shrimp. So they were cooked in annatto or in a sauce with that. So that would be they tasted pretty good, but I couldn't tell you what part of that was the annatto. So
yeah, fair enough.
Okay, hit us with this conversation you've got going.
Yeah, this was a bit of a comment section soap opera kind of. Wonderful recipe. I made a half recipe. I cut the mustard to half a teaspoon and added 3/4 teaspoon of onion powder and Old Bay seasoning. I'm gluten-free, so made with the gluten-free all-purpose flour and oat milk, Tinkyata rice elbows, and Simple Needs sourdough bread and earth-balanced butter. I can handle goat cheese, so I used both goat jack and cheddar. I added 1 small box of super greens, microwaved for 3 minutes, drained and chopped. Delicious vegetarian meal with a hearty green salad. And then another commenter says, so, it's a totally different recipe. And they got a lot of favorites. They got a lot of favorites for that, and I also agree. This person's changed everything about it. Also, they throw in at the end that it's a vegetarian meal, which it was anyway, without any changes. It was a vegetarian meal.
Oh, that's wonderful. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that they added frozen, I guess frozen, super greens really grosses me out. Frozen spinach is something I just absolutely cannot stand. Anyway, the third person, a different person, has commented.
A new challenger has appeared.
Exactly. To defend the first commenter with, I truly appreciate a kind version of this classic. Dairy is just cruel. The addition of greens was a new idea for me. I usually serve it on the side. Thank you, my health-conscious friend.
Ending every letter and email and text for the rest of my life with, thank you, my health-conscious friend.
Confusing everyone, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
This kiss-ass really gets under my skin because They come to defend this person who made a bunch of weird changes to the recipe. Why? There's no reason to. But also, dairy is just cruel, they say. Well, the original commenter said that they used goat cheese to make the recipe. So, I guess they don't think goat dairy is cruel? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if it is goat jack and cheddar, and that's not going to upset your lactose issues, right? Your dairy mm-hmm. issues, then I guess that makes sense. But
if dairy is cruel, then does it matter what kind of animal you're talking about? Is my question.
I don't know. I mean, the first person did say they can handle goat cheese. So presumably mm-hmm. they're at a point where, and maybe this person also is at a point where they can't eat cow's milk cheeses, but maybe uh-huh. some of the other ones are okay.
Interesting that you should say that.
Here we go.
Same commenter, this white knighting commenter, made another comment, which I didn't copy because it was...
Oh, did they?
Yeah. They made a comment, which I didn't copy over because it's very standard. But what they said was earlier on the same recipe, oh, this recipe was really good. I used organic cheese in mine.
Oh, so what this person thinks is that organic cheese is, if it's organic, it doesn't have dairy in it?
I like to think they think no one's going to notice that they had already said they liked the recipe. So when they say, oh, you're right, other person, dairy is cruel, no one's going to notice that they admitted to just going ahead and straight up using dairy, cow dairy, in their dish before.
I like that you're like the detective of the comment sections now, which is obviously your job on the podcast, among many other things. But what I really enjoy is that you've become the person who's like, they can't keep getting away with this. I'm gonna put them behind bars for this hypocrisy.
Exactly. This
like nobody's letting in, nobody's slipping anything past you anymore.
I think I'm finally old enough to realize that I will not get any actual satisfaction for going back and commenting on this first person's comment with their second comment and saying, oh, so are you a hypocrite or what? Because no matter what they said, it would never satisfy me. I think I know that now, but I do still feel the urge to do that a little bit.
Yeah. It is a powerful urge to want to give people enough rope to hang themselves with, essentially.
Yes. Exactly.
The other thing is, I guess, okay, so I do not have issues processing dairy, but I've
brag.
That's right. Yeah. Go me, right?
Mm-hmm. Me too. People nowadays are always like, oh, well, I couldn't have mac and cheese. It would really wreck my stomach all night. Not me. I'm fine with it.
Okay. Well, now that we've both
brag. Yep.
But I do have close friends that do have issues, and family members and so on. And so I understand if you can't eat it. I get being worried about it. I get even to a level assigning a morality to the food mm-hmm. in question. You know, I get that.
Yep.
But there is still something that really rubs me the wrong way about calling a version of a recipe that's designed to handle the concerns of people who can't eat the recipe that's been published. Mm-hmm. There's something I don't like about tagging it as kind versus cruel.
Yes.
Something really rubs me the wrong way about doing it like that.
I also don't like the morality with they put in some frozen greens. Fine if you want to do that, whatever. I don't care for it, but fine. To say, oh, you're the health conscious one, you person who added some greens to your macaroni and cheese. That's nothing. Come on. It doesn't make it health conscious. We know.
Yeah. You're still eating mac and cheese, but mm-hmm. because you put some greens in there, it's now healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I mean, it's mac and cheese. If you want to eat mac and cheese, eat mac and cheese.
Yeah, that's what I say.
Yeah, no, it's legal. Nobody's going to stop you yet.
Macaroni and cheese is legal.
That's right. Yes. It's important that we all recognize that.
T-shirt design there.
What's that? A t-shirt design?
Uh-huh.
I'm liking this. Okay, let's bring this home. We got one last comment to discuss. And boy, is it a doozy. I'm a big fan of recipe site, with, of course, exceptions. Was raised in Europe and chosen as an adult to live and to educate myself in Paris, Milan, at Cordon Bleu.
La-di-da.
have devoured everything I could. Cheffery on the planet, that's spelled C-H-E-F-F-E-R-Y. 20 years ago, I went almond milk and never went back. Since I'm not in any way competitive, I'm not sure if this makes a difference in some recipes. Of course, I've made hundreds of recipes with, but a professional opinion would be of some interest. This mac and cheese sounds yummy, and in these terrifying times, comforting and a great main or side dish. Blessing to all and to all goodwill. Congratulations,
blessings
everybody.
To all, and to all a good night.
Congratulations, everybody. Santa Claus has dropped his first recipe comment on this podcast.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if Santa Claus told you that, oh, well, I chose to educate myself in Paris and Milan? How quickly you'd end that conversation?
Doesn't say chose. Says chosen as an adult to live and to educate myself. Apparently, this person won the lottery.
Yeah, exactly.
It got a golden ticket one day that said you can go to Cordon Bleu and Gene Wilder will kill all the people that you meet that day in various horrendous ways.
That's right. Good day, sir. Etc.
That's right. You get nothing. Also, do we know, is there a Cordon Bleu in Milan? Because it's kind of spelled what I imagine would be the Italian way. Like it's B-L-U with an apostrophe afterwards.
That is a really good question. I only know the one in Paris, so.
Yeah. That's where they you go, and the way that you study is that they stuff you inside a chicken breast with some ham and cheese in there. And that's how you learn the secrets of cooking. You're doing like a birth therapy thing.
You have to fill your mouth with butter and only let it out once it's melted.
That's right, yeah.
You've done it right.
Yeah, and then the worst part is that while you're doing that, you also have to like activate the herbs. You have to, like, smack them against your teeth so it releases the essential oils.
Oh, activated herbs.
And then
start a health program with that.
That's right, yeah. Thank you, my health-conscious friend.
Thank you.
And
blessings to all and to all goodwill.
That's right. And then if you escape the chicken breast and you have survived the ordeal, then you're given your chef whites at that point.
And I assume you're Cordon Bleu. You must get a blue ribbon
when you
graduate, right?
Because otherwise, otherwise, you should sue those people for false advertising, whatever that is in French.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know what this person is saying most of the time.
It's very pretentious. I like that they say they're not in any way competitive, but they would like people on this website to praise them for their very good choices. You know, it's like raising your hand for the teacher and saying, oh, I know you told us we didn't have to follow this particular style guide, but I did. I did extra work and tried extra hard. Is that okay? Is it okay that I did that? Yeah, you just want to be praised. I get it.
Yeah, I've never liked people who front load all of this stuff. I think if you have to say these things, it's a clear mark of insecurity. And again, we have a parasocial neg leading off with, I'm a big fan, with, of course, exceptions.
Yeah. It's important that you know you're not perfect.
That's right. I'm not one of these mindless hogs in your comment section who just love you and everything you do, okay? I'm an independent person with my own inner dialogue or inner monologue. I have my own life and my own thoughts, and you can't take those from me.
I have a rich inner life, and it involves Paris and Milan and chefery. Right.
I own many leather-bound books. My apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Oh, man. And yeah.
I don't even know what half of this is trying to say. Like, 20 years ago, I went almond milk and never went back. Then two sentences later, of course, I've made hundreds of recipes with. With what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. And they say they made the switch, never went back. They've done hundreds of recipes, so they clearly are set in their ways. That's totally fine. But then they're saying, I'd like a professional opinion. No, you wouldn't. You'd like people to tell you that you're really great for switching to almond milk and you're doing great and innovative work in the kitchen.
And I'm not even convinced. See, the way that I read that sentence was exactly what you're saying, but that the professional opinion was referring to themselves. I'm just really confused as to what's going on with having this comment.
Yeah, that's a good point. They might be saying, would you like a professional opinion? Although they don't actually give it, which is a surprising amount of restraint for this person.
Yes. I will say, having made a number of things with almond milk for people who couldn't eat dairy and couldn't eat soy, if what has to set in your recipe is not milk, then almond milk is usually fine. Like, for example, I've made a flan with almond milk, because what really sets in a flan more than anything is the eggs.
Yes.
To create the custard. So almond milk is fine because the milk is mostly there to add liquid and richness, fat, right? And I don't, in a lot of the mac and cheese recipes that I've made, the milk does need to thicken and set a little bit. Like it needs to incorporate everything. So I don't know if it would make a difference. I don't know if you could just get away with using maybe less of it. I don't, to create the same thickness. I'm not sure.
One thing I do know is, in a time they made mac and cheese, but before we think of when they made mac and cheese, the 18th century, they did quite often use almond milk for it.
Interesting.
Interesting thing. And I wonder how that would change the taste. So, but people have been using almond milk, at least in Europe, since at least the Middle Ages. You see it in some medieval recipes.
That's right.
So,
and a lot of cheeses probably at that time, well, actually, I don't know. I don't know if modern cheeses are nuttier in flavor.
Yeah, I wonder.
A lot of, like, especially English-style cheeses tend to have that nuttiness associated with them. So I do wonder if using almond milk would help kind of incorporate that a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like the flavor might be too much for me. We talked last time about coconut milk and how it lends a distinct coconut flavor, I think, to dishes. And almond milk, I kind of feel like I do taste the almonds. But, you know, that might work great with some cheeses.
Well, I guess in that case, we might as well just segue into it. How do you make your mac and cheese? What's your personal touch here?
I always make a bechamel because I, as a kid, that's what my mother did. I never had the box macaroni and cheese. Like, that was one of those things that was deemed too much junk food to be in the house. So we never had that. And I like a really sharp cheddar, and now that I try to refine my flavors and textures more, I like it with, like, a Jack or a Colby, something that will melt pretty well. So, sharp cheddar for flavor, Jack or Colby for meltiness. How about you?
For me, it's, I've done a bunch, and the first time that I did it, I used a recipe that was, if I remember correctly, was cheddar and Parmesan.
Sounds good.
And that was pretty basic. That's the one that I mentioned had a little bit of trouble staying together when it was baked. It often had trouble not separating, especially when it was reheated.
Yeah, but that is a problem with macaroni
and
cheese.
Yeah, and what sucks about it is that it is a recipe for a baked mac and cheese. It's not like I was misusing it, you know what I mean?
Right.
But at any rate, what I've done since, I've mostly gone to stovetop, and when I've done it, hold on.
I always feel kind of fancy now when I use all white cheeses and make a white macaroni and cheese and it's not bright yellow, like we talked about before. There is something very fun and classic about a yellow macaroni and cheese, but the white ones always seem like fancier, like restaurant macaroni and cheese to me, which I like.
Yes. And so what ended up happening here is that it became a tradition to always have mac and cheese on Valentine's Day. So usually I make a pretty big deal about it, and I've done, let's see. So I know I did one that was that basic recipe, but it was bacon and habanero.
Ooh,
in the cheese sauce. Crumbled up bacon, pieces of habanero that I fried into the roux, and then just kind of, you know, they were chopped up really fine. 1 year we had sea scallops seared for the dinner. So I made, I think I used medium shells instead of small shells.
And shells for scallops. Very nice.
Nice. Yeah. Yes. Yes. The no pun intended Valentine's Day dinner. And because I wanted the scallops to have, they had a very, it was a rosemary and paprika coating.
Delicious.
On the sear. So I wanted that flavor to stand out. So I did it with Fontina. And then just a ton of black pepper. And I think I used aged Havarti as well, which I actually really like because it has those nutty notes. And it has like a hint of caramel. There's a bit of sweetness to it. A bit of sugar.
I was
going to
say sweetness. Yeah, it would be really nice with some scallops. As well as like a caramel flavor because they're so delicious with brown butter. I already know.
Exactly. And so, but the best one I've ever made. So one thing that I learned about my wife's family is that.
My wife.
Great. Glad we got that out of the way. Is that?
Oh, it'll come back. Don't worry.
God damn it. is that they used to make a 6-cheese mac and cheese.
That's so many cheeses.
And this being me, I of course decided I'm going to defeat you by making a 7-cheese mac and cheese.
Exactly. You have to one-up them, of course.
So I went to the store, and I already had some cheeses in my basket. And then the lady who runs the cheese counter there, she's like, you know, can I help you? The fromagerie. Yes. Well, hold up. We're not in that fancy a suburb. It's just the cheese counter where I am.
That's fair.
So she says, you know, can I help you? And I say, well, I'm trying to make a 7-cheese mac and cheese to defeat my in-laws.
this is very important.
And
yes.
She looks at the cheese that I have in my cart, and she's like, are you sure that's going to be one of them? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. This cheese is non-negotiable. and then she said, you know, a couple of these other ones, maybe pick one and keep that one. And she gave me very good advice, and it was excellent. Because the other thing is that everybody wanted to tell me, whenever I bring this up, that I'm going to make a mac and cheese, I want, you know, a different kind and all that. The one thing that they always bring up is Gorgonzola.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I've had some blue cheese or Gorgonzola mac and cheeses. It really takes over, and not in a way that I enjoy. And I do love blue cheese, so.
Yes. So anyway, we're going to play a little game here. I want you to guess the cheeses that were involved, especially the non-negotiable cheese that was already in the cart.
Okay, I'm going to make it easy on myself. Cheddar. I'm going to say extra sharp. Cheddar is one. Okay, extra sharp. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Parmesan, because you mentioned it before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I replaced parts of the cheddar and Parmesan quantities with other cheeses is what I did. So it was still the same total quantity of cheese, just with different cheeses.
Okay. Gouda.
No.
Oh. Swiss for sharpness. How about
aged
Swiss?
Swiss. Very okay, good. Yes.
All right. Aged that's Swiss. Three. Parmesan, cheddar, Swiss, but not Gouda. Colby.
Nope.
Colby.
Nope. I have used Colby, just not in that one.
Fontina again.
Yes. I wanted, with all the other cheeses I was going to use that were going to have trouble melting, the Fontina I knew was going to make it, like, really smooth, which it did.
Munster.
Nope.
Jack.
Nope.
I'm trying to think of mild cheeses. Is it a mild cheese?
I've already mentioned that.
I'm still short. How many? Two, I think.
You got cheddar, Fontina, Swiss, and Parmesan. So you're short three.
Ugh. No, I don't think I got any more in me.
Okay, there was aged Havarti, like I mentioned already.
Havarti, of course, I never think of Havarti.
Yeah. This was the discovery for this one. I was shocked at how good this was, because I didn't use a ton of it, but it was smoked mozzarella.
That is such a good idea. Oh, and smoky flavors.
I was afraid it wouldn't melt. Yeah. I was afraid it wouldn't melt, and then I was kind of afraid that it wouldn't taste like anything, but no, it had that shot of smoke all the way down.
Mm.
It was incredible.
That sounds really good.
And the non-negotiable cheese...
Yes?
...was feta.
Wait, though.
Uh-huh.
Feta, hold on. Feta cheese in a macaroni and cheese?
Mm-hmm.
Does it melt, though? Feta's not a melting cheese.
So it partly melts. And what's interesting to me... So this is why I wanted the challenge. This is why I wanted to push the envelope on this one, because I wanted to find out, what does that taste like? I've never had a mac and cheese with feta in it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has.
So I tried it, and I actually really, really liked it. I don't think I got flavored. I think it was plain. I don't think I got any of the fancy herb or any of that. And what I really liked about it is that it did melt some, but it was... it retained just enough texture, even when reheated, that you would be eating all of these other cheeses and you had the pasta and all that. And then you just had like a little, small, tiny cube.
Morsel?
A morsel. That's a good word for it.
Because I'm thinking about, although I didn't care for blue cheese mac and cheese, I'm thinking about how that's also not a melting cheese. It did make nice little pockets of a slightly cooler temperature cheese in there, which was a nice texture.
And in this case, it did that, but more importantly, it provided like these little morsels of saltiness and a different texture from everything else. It wasn't all smooth.
Very nice.
And so it was just this really nice contrast. And I was genuinely shocked at how good it was. But it worked.
I need to try this.
I haven't done it since, and I'm kind of annoyed that I haven't done it since, because it probably is the best mac and cheese I've ever made.
Well, I need to try this. I'm a late convert to feta. I didn't like it as a child. I didn't really like it as a young adult. In the past few years, I really come around on it. I like olives a lot now, which I never used to like. And feta and olives are a great combination of things. So, but feta and mac and cheese, maybe.
And then I served that with, I sliced up smoked sausage that had cheese and jalapenos on the inside and topped it with fried onions, which is one of my standard mac and cheese toppings.
Cheese in the sausage. I think you can count that as another cheese. I think you can bump this up.
Yeah, but it was just cheddar, so no big deal.
Different kind of cheddar.
Mm. By the way, you were actually right about the Gouda and Jack, just not for that year.
Uh-huh.
2 years later, I did smoked cheddar, Gouda, pepper jack. And then there was a hint of a Gouda that had hatch chilies in there. And a hint of an arbol and garlic hot sauce.
Ooh, a smoky flavor. Very nice.
Smoky and hot and just, that one was very, very pleasant.
That sounds really good. I do love a spicy macaroni and cheese. I like to put a little of the Cholula Chipotle flavor on my mac and cheese, which is the smoky one.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Mm.
I would definitely recommend trying out, like, if you really want a smoky one. I think I have done at least one where I've used the adobo chipotle, you know, like you take out the can and the leftover. That can be excellent in a mac and cheese sauce.
I feel like you'd really get the orange color if you use some adobo sauce.
Oh yeah, you're not kidding. You'd be lucky if it doesn't turn bright red.
Exactly.
So, those are our personal touches.
Mm-hmm.
We should talk about somebody else's personal touch with this recipe. And this is hilariously tough. Well, this is coming out when? This is after Election Day, isn't it? Well after Election Day. So this might be even more topical than it is right now.
It's funny. This is an older recipe, but we only just found out about it very timely. Mm-hmm. So, would you like to tell us about this recipe?
I don't know why we're telling anybody about this recipe, frankly, but this is, in case you need something to feed your guests after you have crudité from Wegmans, this is Dr. Oz's Mindful Macaroni and Cheese.
Woo!
And then possibly Senator Oz by the time we're releasing this.
From your lips to Satan's ears.
He seems to be in control of a lot of things lately. He sure does. Anyway, so let's talk about this. So what's the deal? How is this one different?
See, this is such a strange macaroni and cheese. I feel like the goal was only and entirely to make it look like macaroni and cheese.
Which it doesn't.
Yes, because we saw the video. It's lumpy. It's not yellow enough.
It's lumpy and it's clumpy. And altogether dumpy.
Mindful mac and cheese. Okay. Ta-da. So, here's what we've got in this recipe. It is made with quinoa pasta, first of all. Not so weird yet, right? Raw cashews soaked overnight, mixed with vegetable broth. You grind those up in the blender, right? You make kind of a cashew milk.
Yeah.
Then in a saucepan, or skillet, you are going to use some olive oil to sauté a chopped up onion, some chopped up ginger.
Oh boy.
Some turmeric, salt and pepper. All right? You sauté that, you're going to put that in the blender too. And then you're going to add to the blender 1 cup of canned cannellini beans. Those are the creamy white beans. Boy. A cup of canned sauerkraut, drained. It's important.
Yes.
Oh, here we go. Someone's angry about sauerkraut in mac and cheese. And why wouldn't you be?
Clark is a German Spitz. Why is he? What is he so mad about?
He knows it's inappropriate still. And a teaspoon of lemon juice for that piquant kick at the end.
Yeah. You know what I've always felt about mac and cheese is that it doesn't taste enough like citrus.
So you grind up all this in the blender. It makes kind of a slightly chunky orange, but not orange enough. Barely yellow.
Yeah, it's sauce. kind of beige. Is yeah. the best way to refer to it.
And you pour that over your quinoa pasta, and then in this little video, you get some of those really nice food porn close-ups, except it's lumpy and it looks like crap.
Yeah, so it's actually really more of a very food bad. Snuff film. And the thing about it is, I don't want to be... The thing about this is, you know, we had two of these comments talking about what are the substitutions that you make if you need to be gluten-free or lactose intolerant and so on. And so, like, I don't want to be mad for trying to find an alternative.
Right.
Having said that, from what I've tasted of all of these foods, I cannot imagine this giving you the feel or flavor of mac and cheese.
That's the thing, because it really does seem like it's just about the texture. Because if you look at this recipe, it will tell you, oh, hey, there's a lot of protein from these beans. There's a lot of good probiotics from this sauerkraut.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah. If you want those things, fine, whatever. Those have nothing to do with macaroni and cheese by flavor or texture or anything.
Louisa, you're not getting it. You're not practicing mindful eating.
Mindfulness is when you make something out of whatever you have, but it looks like food you want to eat, and then you eat it. That's mindfulness, I guess. The fact that there's ginger in it, and some people commenting on this weird video are like, ginger? Why ginger? No explanation. Why on earth would you put ginger, which is very strong and very different from any flavors you would find in a macaroni and cheese?
Well, and you mentioned that the recipe that you found, because we had to look up what the text of the recipe is, you mentioned that it's not quite the same as the video that we saw.
Here's the interesting part. In the recipe as written, same name, mindful macaroni and cheese, they used garlic instead of ginger, which you do find in a lot of mac and cheese recipes. Yeah. And it also used quite a bit of nutritional yeast, which is a vegan alternative to cheese flavoring. You see that in a lot of vegan recipes. So if you had made those substitutions as originally written, this would taste far more like mac and cheese than the recipe we saw the video for. And that one's newer, so I really don't understand why they would make those changes.
Yeah, no, that video was disconcerting.
It really did seem like a joke once they put that ginger in there to me.
Yeah, that was the moment where I was like, because that video is from 2019. And I'm just like, did Dr. Oz used to work for 5 Minute Crafts? Like, what's happening here?
Exactly.
Just very strange.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like you see this a lot on TikTok too. Recipes that don't have any relation to the real recipe, but they're able to make it kind of look on camera like the real recipe.
Except this doesn't even do that. That's the thing. This doesn't even do that. If that's what your mac and cheese looks like, you fucked up.
You're right. But it is a lumpy yellow sauce, so I feel like people can tell themselves that counts as mac and cheese.
You keep saying it's yellow, and I'm beginning to think that maybe I don't remember this nearly as well as I do, because I keep thinking it's like raw cashew tan is all I can think of.
Well, that tiny little bit of turmeric does tinge it to like a lemon yellow, not a true golden yellow. Yeah, right.
Well, I'm always saying my mac and cheese needs to look like the shade of, I'm trying to think of what even is lemon yellow, like a thing that you, oh my God.
Well, the lemon yellow color lets you know there's going to be a lemon juice taste in there too. So,
oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. It's, what's the term for, it's aposematic in nature. It's telling you to stay the hell away.
Oh, that's true. What a strange thing. Yeah.
Yeah, strange recipe by a strange man.
Yes, very true.
At any rate, this is a very special episode for two reasons, which 10th episode.
Yes.
We covered that. Actually, I guess three reasons, because that's the first time we've ever, like, dunked on a recipe.
Yes.
But also, it's a very special episode, because this is the first time we've had a comment sent in by a listener.
Hooray, I'm so excited.
Now, if you are interested in sending us a comment, we heavily recommend you do so by email, nosubstitutionspls, that's nosubstitutionspls@gmail.com. I'll remind you again when we do the closing, as I usually do, but we were able to get this, and we would love to have more of these. Check this out. This is on a recipe for a vegetarian tortilla soup, which I have since been told was the person who sent me this said they made the recipe successfully and it was quite good, which makes this comment perplexing. Mm-hmm. I made this and it turned out great. I didn't use any of the ingredients listed because I didn't have them. I had water, dirt, and a rock. I threw the rock and dirt into the water and mixed well. Served with fresh ice cubes. Definitely making again.
I kind of like this anarchy in recipe reviews sometimes. Like, this doesn't help anybody, but, you know, it's entertaining because it wasn't meant to help anybody.
I hate to tell you this, but according to what I'm seeing here, 187 people found this helpful. Helpful with what? I don't know. Helpful with maybe feeling better about themselves? That maybe their day isn't going so badly that they had to post that?
187 people have chosen violence today, is what I'm getting.
Well, it is. It is the California Penal Code for murder, so.
Exactly. Oh, it's all coming together. There's a plan. There's a plan for all of
it. Love it when a plan comes together. Exactly. Anything else we need to say about rock, dirt, and water person?
No, but thank you very much to our listener who sent that in. I don't remember if you mentioned their name.
Oh, yes. Sorry. That was my friend Amanda. So thank you, Amanda. Hope you're the first of many. First time listener, long time. Sorry. First time submitter, long time listener. Hopefully.
Great. There we go. Yep. Once we call people out by name, they have to listen to the show, obviously.
That's right. Yeah.
And thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please tell your friends.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, we are at NoSubsPlease on Twitter, at least for the moment, and on Mastodon at NoSubsPlease at Mastodon.online. As I mentioned, if you find any comments that you want to send our way for us to rip on, that goes to NoSubstitutionsPliss at gmail.com. Again, that is NoSubstitutionsPLS at gmail.com. We apologize. Every other permutation was taken.
And until next time, we have been No Substitutions, Please. And like the best cooks, we will leave you wanting more.